This week on F8, The Photographer's Perspective, I have John Kosmopoulos, where we'll talk behavior science, creativity, and creating your own unique style. I've been fortunate to work alongside some of the world's most inspiring photographers. I've watched how they've helped others at our conferences and transform the way they see through the lens. Welcome, I'm your host, Chris Smith, founder of Out of Chicago. This is F8, The Photographer's Perspective, the show where we have candid conversations and go in-depth with the pros to get to know them better. Join us each week as we discuss photography, get to know their personal perspectives, and introduce you to new places and experiences, helping you get the most out of your creative passion. All right, I'm here with John Kosmopoulos. John, how are you doing today?
I'm very well, thank you, and thank you for pronouncing my name very well.
I don't always spell it correctly, as we've learned, but I've screwed that up in the past. But yes, okay, good. I'm glad I said it right. So you've actually taught at a few of our events in the past. You've taught at the Out of Chicago conference a couple of times, I believe, and you were at the Out of New York conference, which was the first time we worked with you. And that was super exciting, too, because you've done a lot of great work in Chicago and in New York. So you're kind of the perfect guy to have with us. Can you describe to people like your work, what you do? Because like a lot of times I'm like, oh, he's the long exposure guy, because I just love your long exposure photos. But there's so much more to it than that. So give us a little, just tell us a little bit about the work that you do.
Sure. First of all, thank you for the opportunity to be part of this podcast. Well, I know you've done many of these before. Yeah. So, and I've always been happy to be part of Out of Chicago, Out of New York, Out of whatever you plan to plan in the future. So by all means, I really enjoy coming to these events, and I know people that come to them really enjoy them as well. As far as my work goes, I mean, I do like long exposure, obviously, but I don't consider it my end all be all. In other words, it really is a creative choice for me. I don't see it as a, I see it more as a tool. If the shot calls for it, I will use it. But ultimately, I'm much more eclectic, I guess you can say. And that's sort of my my philosophical mantra. I tend to sort of like to do different things, whether it be architecture, landscape, minimalist work, abstract photography. I like it all. I mean, I've never been a big believer in this idea of, and many of your listeners, I'm sure, have heard this idea of the Helsinki bus station, where, you know, the idea is to literally stay on course, hone in on one subject, and just do your best at it. I very much believe in trying different things, various things, being a master of many things. So this whole thing about jack of all trades, master of none, never has worked for me. I've never liked the idea. I think it circumscribes human excellence in a lot of ways. So I'm happy to try to be the best of many, many worlds in photography.
Wow. And now this isn't actually, although I feel like it could be because of some of the galleries that you're in and some of that kind of stuff and the people that you work with, I feel that this could be your full-time job, but you also are a professor. Am I saying that right? You teach at the university, right? I mean, tell us a little bit about that too and kind of how it informs your photography.
Yeah, absolutely. So my full-time gig, if you will, is teaching behavior science, psychology. I've been doing it for a long time. In fact, I worked clinically with individuals with various developmental disabilities, acquired brain injuries, mental health concerns. That was something that I did at a hospital for the longest time before I became sort of a full-time professor at one of the colleges here in Toronto. And I love teaching. And that certainly lends itself really, really well to photography. As you can imagine, the two worlds of psychology and photography certainly intertwine, your own psychology, my psychology. And when the two worlds meet, we can come up with some pretty profound stuff, I think, in our photography by thinking along those lines.
How does, you know, what you do with behavioral sciences and that, how does that help when you're helping other people to become better photographers? Because that's a lot of what you do is teaching and taking people out to places to get great shots.
For those of you who may or may not be familiar with the field of behavioral science, it really comes down to how do you provide good teaching and learning experiences? And the science itself is profound in the sense of it offers a lot in the way you can systematically teach any skill, no matter what that is, whether you're talking about photography, whether you're talking about managing your own anxieties about things, whether it's whatever. So the skill set lends itself really, really well to sort of teaching in the field, but obviously in the classroom as well. So in my experience has been that when people sort of, you know, because it's a very natural thing when you're teaching something, but at the same time, I'm always thinking about in my head about, you know, when I talk with an individual, when I sort of I'm one-on-one or with a group, I always look at the dynamics, I always look at, you know, what does a person really need to learn individually to sort of take their skill set to the next level. And that's sort of something I feel out a little bit, but obviously that comes with a lot of experience as well.
So you're probably the perfect person to ask this question, which okay. I want to keep. You're going to give the right answer, the definitive answer.
Uh-oh.
Is it possible to teach people to be creative, or is that something you're born with?
You know, that's a very good question. And you can imagine that in my own field, that's been a large question as well. You know what, I think there's something to the fact that people can be, you know, born with a certain way of looking at the world. But at the same time, I'm a real big believer in the idea that your environment shapes whatever your behavior happens to be, whether it's a skill, whether it's an experience. I think ultimately being able to go from, you know, A to Z, and however you define it is a little bit different for everybody and every photographer. So if you're looking at, you happen to be a beginner and now you want to be what the professionals are doing, for example, that takes a little bit of time. That takes some steps, sometimes baby steps, but everybody's different in the way they learn it. So in a lot of ways, you can learn to be creative. And you can imagine that, you know, you can take a picture and you can learn how to do that. And then the creativity ultimately may come down to, you know, your Photoshop or whatever that is. And how do you take that to the next level based on what you imagine, right? We often refer to that as vision. But ultimately, I think you can get there with the right approach, or else you wouldn't be able to teach photography at all. You wouldn't be able to teach creativity at all in that sense.
So I think you do a lot of image reviews and help people with their photos along the way. If someone came to you and they've got like all the classic shots, maybe it's from Chicago, you know, I've got the skyline and I've got this,
sure.
And they're like, but I want my pictures to be more like yours. Or they might just say, I want to come up with my own style. How would you help someone to do that and say, you know, you've got to get yourself away from just the same thing that everyone else has got?
Yeah, it's always a good question. It's always in the back of my mind. I mean, you know, it's often said that imitation is sort of the first way we learn, right? So I don't think there's anything wrong with trying to imitate a certain style or what have you at the beginning, right? But ultimately, I think you need to sort of branch out and try what I like to refer to as curiosity experiments. In other words, be curious about the world, try something completely different, get into your discomfort zones. You know, I often talk about in my talks, and I will be talking about this in Chicago as well, in order to distinguish yourself, especially in the world of Instagram and you know, well-known photographers, because social media, after all, is this bubble that we live in, right? We often see a certain things and we think, oh, this is the ultimate fine art approach or style or what have you, when in fact, there are many, many possibilities and many explorations we can consider. But ultimately, I say to my fellow colleagues and my fellow photographers that if you want to sort of distinguish yourself, and I say this to students, obviously, as well, you know, I have a couple of tests, if you will, that you can sort of look at for yourself. One happens to be to stand where millions of people have stood, right? And that seems very counterintuitive, right? Because, you know, you're ultimately, when you're standing where everybody else has stood, you're looking at postcard versions of whatever you're seeing. And that's very true in Chicago. Chicago is probably one of the most well-photographed cities, and it's an architectural wonderland. So it's hard not to take that shot that you often see. However, I think one of the tests is to be able to, if you want to do a Google search, if you want to look at all different pictures from different photographers, and then sort of say, you know what, this is the same scene, but this is how I'm going to make it different. This is what I see differently. It could be a slant of light. It could be moving to the left. It mean going down a little bit. It could mean I want to process it this way. So there's ultimately that part of the challenge that I think is still worthwhile doing. Instead of being able to climb on a mountain that nobody has climbed and find that tree, that lone tree on the mountain, and take a photograph and say, that's mine. I've done it first. I'm not sure that's always necessary. It's cool, but it's not necessarily. And the second sort of experiment, if you will, is, you know, take 10 photographs of a scene or 100 photographs or 1,000 photographs. And you can say, you know, can you pick out John Cosmopolis? Can you pick out Chris Smith from all these? Literally throw them up in the air and then come around and pick one that you think is a Chris Smith, for example, right? If people can do that, right, whether it's 10, 100, 1,000, then there might be something a little bit different and unique about your work that nobody else has been doing that we can say, yes, that's absolutely Chris, right?
Right.
But well, the opposite is also true.
But yes.
Well, you know, I appreciate that. But at the same time, honestly, I love what I do. But and if people love it, that's great. I guess the third test would be more like the opposite of that, of what I just said. In other words, and I've talked to this with other photographers as well. You think of the work of Da Vinci, and he has this new discovered image, a painted image called Salvatore Mundi, I believe. And people have attributed to him because they know his style, right? There's been questions about whether it's his or not, right? But can you take, say, one of your photos, one of my photos, and basically say to a person, tell me why this is mine? How is it different than everybody else's? So if you can do that, I think you might have a unique style or vision or just, you know, signature thread in your work that really works.
So now I'm going to put you under pressure then. If you take a bunch of your photos and you say, okay, it's these five that really say John Cosmopolis, what is it that makes those different? And I can say what it is, but I want to hear what you say.
There is a minimalism that I like, you know, regardless of what I'm photographing. Everything from a lone tree, for example, in the snow to, you know, a building or to whatever it is, I try to isolate it in such a way that it minimizes the noise around it. This whole less is more type of idea. So whatever I do, whether it's a landscape, urban scape, you know, cityscape, whatever scape, I tend to try to minimize the impact of all the other stuff that happens on the side that may be complementary or not. And then focus on a very specific area. But this does not mean that I completely take away certain elements within a frame, because I do think they're important. Like if you take a architectural image, you can decide on doing a long exposure of it. It's more like a portrait, for example, and that's all you see. Or you can take the actual urban environment. We see people walking around. You see different parts of the building surrounding the context of the building you want to shoot, for example. And I find that much more fascinating because it offers a more vitality to the image versus a straight on portrait shot, which there's nothing wrong with that, obviously. But more importantly, I try to create a dynamism in my photos. And sometimes that happens when I have a vitality of people in the physics of a moment, I guess you can say.
Yeah, but you still need to make that main subject stand out, you're kind of saying. You're sure. Putting it within context, but I've seen so many people that are like, well, yeah, that was a cool, let's say it is a building, but look at how cool that guy is down in the corner, and that's another really great building over on the side. It's like five great things doesn't necessarily make it better. It's that you've got to focus on the one thing that you really want the viewers to see and minimize the rest. Do you do that somewhat in post-processing as well, as far as drawing the eye to certain places and minimizing distractions?
Yeah, absolutely. I think oftentimes when I look at a scene, you know, I sort of bring it on my computer, put it in Photoshop or whatever. One of the things that I noticed right away, you know, I sort of ask myself, why did I take this shot to begin with? I mean, it's interesting, it's cool, but what do I want to do with it? Sometimes I will see it when I'm photographing. And there's this mythology, I guess you can say, about vision out there, I think sometimes, that you always have to see it to take it. And I don't think that's always the case. I think vision is this, you know, spectrum of possibilities whereby you can start at the front end where you see it in the moment and you know what to do with it. Obviously, you can take it into Photoshop and do whatever you want with it. And oftentimes I will see it in the moment, but oftentimes it's in Photoshop as well. And that's where I do the isolation, if you will, or what have you.
So what do you do in Photoshop then to isolate, like you're saying?
Yeah. So, I mean, oftentimes I will play around with things like soft and hard contrasts. Sometimes I will darken an image in certain areas if necessary. I'm not very fanciful when it comes to Photoshop. In other words, I don't edit until I can't edit anymore, so to speak. I very much believe in the idea of less is more. You know, I've said this a few times. But I also like the idea of the least amount of steps for maximum results. And that's sort of another mantra I sort of use for myself where, you know, what do I want to do with this image? How can I accomplish it in the least amount of time, least amount of steps, and get what I want out of it that I sort of, you know, have my imagination has sort of brought about.
You said like increasing and decreasing contrast. Is that right? Like, yeah. What are you doing there? Are you doing like layers and you're painting in like a tone curve or what are you doing?
Yeah. So oftentimes what I'll do is, you know, I may do something very simple, like duplicate a layer. I will use a curve adjustment layer, soften one of the images. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then what I do is, add a mask to that. And then what I do is sort of paint in the areas that I really want to stand out more. And I think it really does provide an almost 3D like effect sometimes, right? And your eye tends to work that way and your mind tends to work that way. So, you know, taking those principles that we've a lot of us know about in art, but also more interestingly, if I can put it this way, in the whole neuroaesthetic field, whereby, you know, your neuropsychology and art comes together. And I do talk about this a lot in the talks I do in Chicago, as a matter of fact, I've done it. But I've done it throughout when I've done them, where you look at certain ideas, certain principles, and what makes a certain art impactful and provide a third look, for example. That X factor, if you will.
Yeah, no, that is so cool. And you hear a lot of people say that the eye always goes to the brightest part of an image, sure. But I feel there's a little bit more to that. Like you're saying that it's where there's going to be lots of contrast too, because you could have a bright area of the image and it's kind of a high key image, but if there's no contrast, I feel there's not, if it's mostly white and then there's a darker contrast area, that's where the eye goes.
So, 100%. Yeah. And I think knowing that is important, right? I mean, when you're sort of considering your image, otherwise it becomes very flat, right? If the eyes can't roam a certain way, especially, you know, if the image is too dizzying, if you will, and it can't rest sometimes, I think that's where, you know, it loses its allure, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So do you see, like, when you're making an image, I want this one point on my image, maybe in the lower left PowerPoint or however you want to call it. I want that to be the place where the eye goes to, or is there more to it where you're like, I'd like the eye to, I think of it more with like the landscape photos where they use a really wide angle lens and you put like the flowers in the foreground and people go, well, I want the eye to go there, but then it's going to wander through the meadow and then it's going to end up in the mountain in the back. Do you think that way also where it's like, I want the eye to wander? And do you think actually like it should start here, move here, and then move here? Is that something that you're thinking about when you're processing or shooting?
Yeah, I do, actually. I ultimately, you know, there's this whole idea is where's the stimulus or stimulation in the image, right? And this is where the eye tends to roam, obviously. It sort of stands somewhere, you know, saunters a little bit and then roams around the area, whether it's a landscape or cityscape or what have you. And I do that. I mean, especially more intricate urban settings, I want the eye to rest in obviously the main subject, but I do want people to notice the little things that count. Because sometimes we miss those details that actually make an image. Because it's, you know, the obvious first impression is that it's a picture of the Chicago theater, right? But at the same time, it could also be the fact that, you know, what does it say on the Chicago theater as to who's going to be performing there,
right?
Or who are the people standing in line and why are they there? Or you see in the background that the L train is coming by as part of the image. You know, there's little things like that that tell stories. And I love the idea of images telling stories.
Man, I feel like I didn't have a lot of questions coming in, but I have so many questions now for you. All behavior science thing. I love it. How about this idea of like old paintings, like say The Last Supper, where it's like your eye would go to one point, but then it's going to wander to not just like two other points, but to like 30, 40, 50, maybe other points. And it's intended to be looked at for a few minutes to get that out of it. Why don't we have that anymore in photography today, or should we? Or because I think nowadays it's kind of like make it good in the first couple of seconds and let people enjoy it for 10 seconds and then move on.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. No. It's a very interesting question. It's a very, very intricate question as well. You know what? It's funny because oftentimes we liken photography to other art forms. right? And we certainly have this idea of fine art by proxy, right? In other words, if we can look at paintings or different types of photography and they've been deemed as fine art, therefore we should try it this way in order to call it fine art, right? But you're right. I mean, looking at something that's symbolic and that grand, and does photography have that, you know, sophistication, if you will, to be able to offer that? I think it's definitely possible. Part of what's alluring about that image, I think, beyond the symbolism and all the different factors in it, because if you can talk about this painting forever, right? Right. And I think that's where photography sometimes lacks, right? Like you said, you get the look, maybe you linger, you think that's cool, right? And then you move on sometimes, right? So how do you create that allure where people talk about it in different ways, either historically, you know, intellectually in some capacity, or liken it to other theories, for example? So it's not just a painting, it's a little bit more. Now you get into, you know, the artsy-fartsy type stuff, if you will. But I mean, that's part of the conversation nonetheless, right? So I think it's doable. I've seen images that are quite grand, and it's interesting because when you see a very, very large image, right? It's a photograph, but it's a very large image, and you start to notice, like I think of Edward Bertinsky's work, right? I see that as very grand. If you've ever seen his work, it's amazing.
I haven't, no, I got to go check it out. What kind of stuff is it?
You know what? He's very much a landscape photographer, but he's very much interested in the way the earth is being impacted by climate change, by plastic. In fact, he has this whole movie, this whole book, this whole exhibit that he calls Anthropocene. And his images, when you see them, are so detailed, but they tell stories. And they're grand enough.
I know what you're talking about now, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, it's that kind of stuff that we don't often see in photography, but I'm glad people like Bertinsky is doing that. And I think that's where we can liken some of the stuff that you talked about in the old masters, for example, to modern day photography, because he's taking this stuff to a next level as well.
Wow. I hope you don't mind that I just keep going down these rabbit holes here. I'm going to flip the script on it then.
Sure.
What can you do with photography that you can't do with painting?
Ooh.
Like, why is photography more powerful in some ways?
You know what? It's
I'm really putting them on the spot here.
No, absolutely. but you know what though? I like the organic conversation, so I appreciate that. So why is photography different than painting, say?
And why is it better? Why? What's the advantage? I mean, better? The first thing that comes to my mind is, like you're saying with this guy, and he's showing the impact that we're having on the world, that when someone sees, I mean, it's more difficult nowadays with Photoshop, but when you see a photograph, you believe that that's real. When you see a painting, it's like, well, they could have done whatever they wanted. So to me, that's the one thing I think. And another thing is, it's a whole lot easier sometimes to just snap the photo than to be like, oh man, now I got to set up my canvas and everything.
100%.
Yeah. Anything else you can think though, that there's something about it that's a little more visceral sometimes? I don't know.
Yeah. I think part of it is that it's almost instantaneous in some ways, isn't it? Versus the painting. There's something to this whole decisive moment thing that Henri Cartier-Bresson talks about.
Uh-huh.
And I think photography is, of course, yeah, I think everybody knows him. And for a good cause, for good reason. But I think, you know what, when you can capture a moment, because oftentimes painters will take photos and then paint from them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the moment, you're capturing something that is very fleeting, right? And that's different, right? And can it tell a story, or is it just a lovely picture, right? I think that's where the differences come in some ways. That, of course, in post-processing, it can look like a painting. You can make it look painterly. But I think the instantaneity, I guess you can say, or the decisiveness around how you create art, I think is a little bit different sometimes. It's contemplative, yes. Sometimes it's patient. Sometimes it's very much likened to painting as far as a process goes. But I think there's some distinctions there. And I think the other arts can certainly learn from photography in that way.
So here's something that I learned. I heard it in this talk somewhere, and I don't know if I can remember it exactly right, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. And then we'll move on from the behavior science stuff. But
sure.
There was a study done where they showed people photographs, and if they could recognize what they were looking at in the first like second, that then they were much, much more likely to view that as a beautiful or a good photograph. And it if it took them 5 or 10 seconds to be like, oh, I see what I'm seeing, then they would never get to the point to think that, oh yeah, that was great. I don't know. Any thoughts on that? Is that something you think about when you're doing your stuff? Like, I want it to have an immediate impact, because that's how it affected me. Is I'm like, I want my pictures, when people see them, to go, whoa, like immediately. And I know what that is, rather than being way too abstract, although you can be abstract and that's a totally different thing, I suppose. What do you think? Does that affect you when you're doing your images?
Yeah, absolutely. I often think about the impact of my images. And it's almost like, you know, you can imagine that there's a screen and you unfurl it and here you are, there it is, right? That's what we do on social media. Every time we sort of post a photo, and obviously you see it on your screen, you go, whoa, right? It's the same idea. However, I think people tend to gravitate towards things that are very familiar to them. So if they've already been, you know, impacted by something already, and they see something similar that they've already liked, and there's an emotional attachment to it, they are more likely to have that same reaction. That's been my experience. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I remember talking with the macro flower photographer, Mike Motes. He did tons and tons of art fairs, and he was like, you know, it wasn't even my best photos that would sell. It was that someone would say, well, you know, my grandmother loved frogs, that's why I'm buying your frog photo or whatever.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And ultimately, it's subjective in that sense. But there's some objectivity in arts as well, which we can talk about another time.
Crazy. I'm sure there's tons of all that to think about. You do a lot of gallery work yourself. You're in some really prestigious galleries. Do you see the same thing where, you know, people end up wanting an image for a reason that you hadn't expected?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, oftentimes, you know, gallery owners will say, you know, we like these images. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, I wouldn't have expected that, but obviously they see something in it, either from a market or business point of view, or they see it more like, okay, I think this is where, you know, your work would fit in, I guess you can say, you know, this whole idea of it's a good fit. But I have to say, for your audience who are listening, because I often get this question, right? There's obviously some great things that happen when you know, a gallery approaches you, right? It's exciting, it's interesting. And I've had experiences where it's been exactly that. But I can honestly say that it's not necessarily end-all be-all, but it's also can be the opposite, as a matter of fact. I mean, the art world is a pretty it's a pretty fickle beast, if I can put it that way, right? You know, one person's art is another person's garbage, so to speak, right? But having said that, you know, the tastemakers, the people that deem something art and worthy of being on a wall, you know, I don't think that's always the case, of course, right? I mean, I've seen work on walls that, you know, you wonder why they're there, but that's not for me to say, right? It's great that it's there for the artist. I mean, it's fantastic, right? But I can tell you that, you know, right now, for example, I'm with a body of photographers with OLE Gallery out of the UK. And that's been quite an exciting project. I was happy to be invited doing it. So we'll sort of, it's in the spurts of starting. So we'll sort of see where all that goes, but it's been exciting to sort of be invited to these things. I'm quite humbled by it all the time. People often ask me, and they're always surprised that I don't have an ego when it comes to this stuff. But I don't, I'm really humbled, that people appreciate my work. I like that they like my work. But ultimately, the gallery thing, as I mentioned, isn't the end all be all. I mean, you can still sell your work and not be in a gallery. And I want people to know that, because ultimately they see that as the ultimate destination, right? It's not necessarily always the case.
So what would you tell someone if they're like, I want to get my work out there, I want more people to see it, maybe I want to make a few dollars along the way.
Sure.
If it's not to try and get into a new gallery, what do you recommend to people?
Yeah, I mean, for me, first of all, you know, have a presence in some capacity, in the sense of have your own website, let yourself be known. I mean, galleries, especially in the world of photography, in the world of Instagram and whatever else, I mean, there's so many photographers out there. People wait to be invited sometimes. I don't think there's anything wrong with sort of saying, hey, here I am. You know, what do you think? right? You have nothing to lose doing that, I think. You know, if it's an email, if it's a handshake at a gallery where you happen to be visiting and having a conversation, I think putting yourself out there so people at least get familiar with you and your work, even if you don't think it's different than everybody else's, but it's still interesting, and maybe somebody will see it as, you know what, yeah, you know, I'd like to take a chance on you. I'd like to see where this goes. I think you just have to put yourself out there. But I think photographers are way too stuck in their heads about this sort of stuff. Like, they get so anxiety prone about trying that they paralyze themselves from doing so. I think you just put yourself out there. If you're okay with feedback, if you're okay with something not working or a door closing, and of course another window opening, that sort of cliche, then by all means, just try it. There's nothing wrong with doing so.
Yeah, or going, you're going to pick me up on this one because I forgot the name. Going to the festival that they do here in Chicago where there's all the different gallery reviewers and that. What's the name of that in Chicago? I should know.
Oh, geez, I'm trying to remember. Yeah. It's escaping me as well.
I was counting on you here.
Sorry.
but it's all gallery owners and, you know, kind of the, you know, in that art community, and you can go and you can pay and get image reviews with different ones. And sure. Then they'll give you their thoughts, like, this is going to work or this is not. Maybe try doing this, like, same sort of thing. But everyone's all in one place rather than shooting out emails to different places. That seems like the type of thing that's going to work for a lot of people. But it seems that world is a completely different world. You're in both worlds. So what do you think that world, that artsy, I would call it somewhat artsy fartsy world, is in a different world than the social media world? But you're kind of in both. And if someone was saying, you know, should I do one or the other? Do you think it's important to be in both? What are your thoughts on that?
You know what? It's, I think starting a social media, or at least having a website, and then getting yourself out there, I think is a good start. I mean, some photographers have been very lucky to be represented by galleries, and then people start to know them. Then they're being told by their gallery owners, you should definitely be on social media, right? So you can get more following, more hits, more likes, the possibility of selling something. So there's a definite synergy to this idea of having both. But I think just put yourself out there. Most people are not really willing to do that because they're afraid of criticism. They're afraid of haters and everything else is. I mean, the fact of the matter is there'll always be somebody that's going to be like, oh my God, you know, Chris, I love your work. I can't wait. Tell me how much it costs. How much, you know, how many pieces can I get? This is what I want for my room. And there's others, you know, in photography where there's a lot of competition when it comes down to this. And it's not always nice, I have to say.
All right, I'm going to ask you a personal question for myself, but only because everybody's probably got, a lot of people have the same thing. Like for me, there was a point where, so this was getting personal now, I was doing a lot of photography, and it was like I was doing the Photographer's Guide to Chicago, so I've got to get out and shoot a ton. And there was a point where I was doing so much that I was able to put together quite a few images that I was really happy with. But then as I started putting all my time into running all these conferences and everything, then it was like, man, I'm not shooting that much. And now I'm at the point where it's like, you know, I'm making some photos, but I feel like they're not as good as what they used to be. And this, I'm thought of it because you said it a little earlier. It's almost like this perfectionist thing. It's like, I don't even really want to put some of these up there because I feel like they're just not at the same level that I was producing at one point. Do you get there? Do you have advice for, I'd say for people, do you have advice for me, John, for getting those shots out there and just saying, hey, I'm just getting back into it and it might not be where I was before, but that's okay or what?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think you just gave your own advice to yourself. I mean, I think, no, in all seriousness, I mean, I think there are times where I do something a little bit different, whether it's post-processing or a different image. And, you know, I you know, something stops me at the beginning to say, should I post this? We all get to that point, right? And we haven't been doing photography for a long time, for example, right? I say, put it out there, right? I honestly could not care about the numbers, the likes, or what have you. Right. It is a representation of myself at this moment in time. Whether it's where I want to be or not is okay. Do you want to put your best work out there first? Sure. Right. But I think there's nothing wrong with trying something a little bit different and seeing how it goes, because oftentimes we're scared to do that. I've come to learn that it's okay to do that, regardless of what people may think about it.
Yeah, no, I think that's it. I just got to do it. You're exactly right. By the way, it's Filter Photo Fest is the one. That
very good. There you go.
In Chicago here.
F8, the photographer's perspective, is brought to you by Out of Chicago. Out of Chicago brings together passionate enthusiasts with world-class photographers all in one epic location where you learn and shoot side-by-side with the pros. Since 2014, we've organized hands-on photography conferences in Chicago, New York City, Moab, and more. We are all photographers ourselves, so we understand what it takes to be inspired, get to the right place at the right time, and live our best creative life.
Talk a little bit more about, you know, I don't think people have gotten a sense of what some of your images look like. Lately, you've done this kind of, I guess high key might be the word to describe it, almost a dreamy look. This is mostly done in post-processing.
Sure.
Can you describe what those images, what you're going for in those images, and how you get that look?
Yeah, sure. I often refer to my color photography as what I refer to as, I guess, muted color metallics. So there is this sense of color, which we don't necessarily see like we see in with the eye. It's more muted, more subdued, almost pale, almost pastel-like, I guess you can say. But there's elements of subjects or parts of the scene that stand out a little bit more that look not necessarily shiny, of course, but they're meant to have the eyes gravitate towards those subjects. So this idea of the level of contrast that you talked about earlier is certainly there, but I like playing around with color. Not necessarily in the way you would see in HDR color images, for example, or again, nothing wrong with that, obviously, but not super saturated colors. I like the subdued colors. I think it offers just a different feel to the image. I think it's a little bit more understated, but not less powerful, I guess you can say. And I do like experimenting that way with color. You know, it's very easy to turn up the saturation on something, very easy to do, but it doesn't always look good, as we know. But the way I accomplish that, there's different ways. I think the beauty of Photoshop is that you can solve many problems in Photoshop many different ways, right? Somebody will use, say, dodging and burning. Somebody will use gradients. Somebody will use a curve. Somebody will use levels, whatever that may be. Oftentimes, what I will do is take the original image, either convert it to black and white, and then start fading it out. Or I will use different blend modes to sort of see what I get, or simply just decreasing the saturation in certain colors while allowing other colors to pop. Sometimes it's opening up the shadows wide and decreasing the highlights. And that's often how I sort of come about putting these images together.
So that first thing you said, I just want to make sure I understand that in my head. You said that you'll convert it to black and white. So it'll be like an adjustment layer or whatever it may be to go to, or how do you say that, to turn it to black and white. But then you're saying you'll lower, say, the opacity on that. So now it starts to make it just a little bit more colorful. And the less of the black and white you put in there, the more color is now coming out in it.
Yeah, Very cool. And you can do it that way, or you can just simply, use a, HSL, adjustment layer, and then play around with the colors a little bit. And I've done that as well. So there's both ways, but if I'm going to do the black and white adjustment layer, for example, I will already have an impression of the image underneath. And sometimes I'll fade the opacity just to see what's going on. But I say I want more red or more pink or more green or more blue, whatever that is. I'll obviously use the sliders to increase those a little bit and decrease the other colors that I want to subdue, see like a yellow or an orange or whatever that is. So I can get a little more of the aesthetic that I like.
And you're describing it kind of on a global level as far as those HSL sliders, but will you also do that for just individual parts of the image and say, hey, I want more of that color to come out here, but not in the other part? And so
100%.
Same way, make that an adjustment layer and then brush that in or is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Selections have been around forever and people have been using selections and working within selections for a very long time. In fact, one of my colleagues at the college where I work, I asked them about, different, Photoshop methods and things of this nature. And I asked them about, selections and all this sort of stuff. And he basically said, John, this has been done many, many different ways for a long, long time. So there's hardly anything new under the sun. So ultimately, just decide what you want to do with it and then just try it, right? So I wanted to give people the idea that there isn't this magic formula to fine art or magic way of, you know, one slider has to go to the left, one slider has to go to the right, and therefore you'll get that. This is what it is. But it is a process of it is a process, right? It's a creative process. Sometimes it has a great end. Sometimes it needs to be massaged a little bit. But ultimately, you are playing around with an image until you get what you want.
Yeah. But sometimes you don't even know what you can do. It's kind of like what you talked about earlier. It's like, I think of it as the steal like an artist type of a thing where it's like, you know, you've got to like emulate someone a little bit, but then try it in your own way. And that's how I've learned a lot of times is to do like to follow the demos in a book or in an online course or whatever, and to use like their test materials and be like, oh, okay, I never even thought about trying those sliders. And then be like, let's do that on one of my images. Be like, whoa, that's super cool. That's something I never would have done. So so I think, and actually I feel that like presets are kind of the same thing where it's like, huh, how could I make this better? And it's like, click a preset. It's like, woo, that's really cool. In the end, I'll probably get rid of the preset and try and emulate that. But like when you're learning this stuff and you're like, I never even thought to try and make it look like that, that helps in that way a little bit sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, we're very averse to the idea of one-click art, right? I mean, we really are, right?
I don't know. There's so many software programs out there now that are saying, we will make your images great with one click. And I'm thinking, if I was a marketing person, that's the last thing I'd be saying. Like, that is not what people want. Well, maybe there are people that want that, but that is not what I want. And most of the people I know, that's not what they want. Sorry to cut you off there. But
no, not at all.
We are averse to the one-click art, and I feel that we should be, yes?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I think if people were to know that all you did was press a button, I think they'd be less inclined to consider it art or fine art, to be quite frank, right? Yeah. This is not to say that you didn't do that. and that's what came out really well. But I think it's a starting point, is it? Like any preset is a starting point, so you can at least get a sense, just like different blending modes or lookup tables, the LUTs, you know. You know, trying different things with those have proven to be very valuable, I think, just to be able to get the aesthetic you want or gradient maps or whatever that may be. So trying it out, and you know, a lot of people like do luminosity masks, for example. I don't think to use those. I don't actually. I hardly ever do. I find that a very cumbersome process. And I think this is why people, you know, have put it together so that you just click some buttons and it happens, which is great, right? But at the same time, if I have a dark image, it's just increase the highlights and it gives me that luminance, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 So Greg Benz, who does Lumenzia, he'll be one of the instructors in Chicago.
Oh, great.
And it's really interesting watching him because it is kind of a one click that gets you to the point where now you're painting with something different.
Yes.
You're still having to do it yourself. So once you kind of learn the basics, I haven't done a lot of it, but I feel that, he's a great teacher too. And so if you're interested in trying to add that to your bag of tricks, he's the guy to learn it from. You love doing urban stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I know you've done a lot of New York. You've done a lot of Chicago. What are your other favorite cities around the world?
Toronto, obviously. Where I'm from. by the way, Raptors, I have to give them a shout out. They're NBA champions.
Sorry
to my American friends. Mind you, a lot of the players are American anyway. But having said that, we're a very proud city in general, but definitely during this moment.
That's right. You guys just had the parade yesterday. Is that right?
Or? We did. Yeah. It was chaos. Absolute chaos, but wonderful chaos. just going back to your question around places, I feel equally at home in an urban environment, whether it's New York, Toronto, Chicago, or whatever, as I do in Miami Beach, as I do in Greenland or Iceland, or what have you. So I like it all. I mean, I'm not, I love the chase. I love being able to find something interesting in wherever I go. Whatever that may be. So there are many, many places, Paris. I mean, Europe in general just enchants me. But I've never been to Japan, and it's definitely on my list, and I definitely want to do that. So Chris, make an out of Japan, I am there.
Tokyo? Where do you want to go? Tokyo?
Tokyo and beyond. Just let me know and I'm there.
All right. It's a plan. I love it. Yeah, cool. That's great. Have you ever done the other one I was looking at, we got to do out of, have you ever done Dubai?
Yes, I have. In fact, I was invited to do a couple of workshops there a few years ago, actually. Loved it. It is a future now city. It really is. Like, it's incredible to just walk out there and just look at it, right? I mean, it's just, it's a dream land. It really is. It's phenomenal. So if you're, yeah, again, one of those places where, as far as out of Dubai, would be quite the feat, I have to tell you. And I can take you places. So I might be there too. I don't know. We'll talk. But it's one of those things where I think photographers would love being there as well, because it does offer a lot as far as architecture, but obviously, you know, landscape with the desert and what have you.
Right. So was that a place where you got your photography juices flowing that got you excited to shoot? Yeah. Yeah.
100%. Because it's different, right? It's a different world. You know, being in the desert or being in the actual downtown core, you know, one of my more, I guess you could say, famous images, and I don't like to use the word famous at all. I'll just put it out there. I really
don't. You
just
did, John. I'm sorry.
I know. I'm sorry. I gotta take that back. You gotta edit that. But one of my most, not even, I don't like popular either, but people tend to like is this image called Dream Walking, which was recently exhibited in Milan, which is just this one guy. He happens to be walking by, and this taxi just flies by up on a ramp, and in the distance is this city, right, called Dubai. And it's just, to me, the story of it was incredible, beyond the city itself, right? The city was the backdrop, but it was the story of a man walking with a briefcase. We're not sure what he was doing, but you see cars flying by, you see a taxi flying by, and you got to wonder, you know, what he's thinking. Is this my lot in life? Is this what I want? What are my dreams? So this is where the story comes in. I think that makes it much more interesting versus simply just taking a picture of Dubai, which is phenomenal in itself. But I think those little moments is what makes your photography different.
Yeah. Well, I give a talk on like 10 things to spark your creativity. And one of them is what you're talking about, which is just find a way to add the human element. And I feel that just by doing that does exactly what you just said, which is like you have this empathy. Like, what if I were that person? What would I be thinking? And it completely changes the image, even though he was a small part of that image that you're talking about. Yeah. He wasn't a big part of it, but because he's darker, I mean, the eye goes there. And in the end, that's how you think about that image is what's that guy thinking and what's he doing and all of that.
So, absolutely. Yeah.
When you shot that, were you kind of doing the street photography, set the scene? Like, you got it all perfect and you're like, oh man, I sure hope a guy, someone interesting walks through the frame. Is that kind of how you did that one?
You know what? I saw the scene first and then he just happened to be walking in the scene. You know, so I was taking,
So you must have had a tripod for the, right? You said it was a long exposure.
It's not a long exposure at all. It's literally just this gent just walking by.
Cars, I thought you said it was kind of, or the car's frozen.
I see. That's a different image, actually, you might be thinking of.
Okay.
That I call Warp Speed. But the other one is just this, literally this one man just walking by on, you know, like a pedestrian. I just happened to be in an area of Dubai where I was just this overhanging, taking a picture of the city, just that scene. And then all of a sudden he walks in. I thought, perfect. And he was the only one there, right? I always look for those things, like many photographers do, because that lone subject, right, is very, very appealing. And the fact is I was just sitting there. All of a sudden, I can still remember this to this day. I have my camera up against my face, looking through the viewfinder, and all of a sudden he just walks through it. The frame. And I just wait until I find what might be the perfect place for me to photograph him. And I just took a couple of shots and before you know it, he was gone.
So it was like two shots. Is that what you're saying? Like when I do those, I'll take like people go, wow, you got the decisive moment. I'll be like, well, I did like 13 decisive moments and I only showed you that one, but it sounds like you actually got it right. Yeah.
In this case, yes. Doesn't always happen that way. I'd love to say that, you know, that's how it always happens, but it doesn't. Sometimes, and even, you know, the master himself didn't have it. He posed himself until something happened.
Right.
So this idea of like, you just turn around and boom, there it is not always the case. And that's really not the definition of a decisive moment. It can be, but ultimately it comes down to being there in the moment and then capturing it decisively.
So you do a lot of things that are not urban, like you mentioned, Greenland, Iceland, and that. When you're in those situations, do you see yourself like in a totally different shooting situation? Like, or do you feel like, hey, it's the exact same thing, but now I'm looking at a waterfall instead of a tall building? Like, do you shoot differently? Do you have a different mindset? Obviously, you're out in nature, but as far as how you're photographing it, you kind of said it's the same. But when I'm out in nature, or like when I'm trying to get that shot, like I said, with the flowers and then the meadow and then the mountain, it's like, sure. I feel like what I'm doing there is sometimes totally different than if I'm shooting, you know, some architecture stuff.
Yeah. I think the difference comes down to, you know, what rules you have for yourself when shooting these subjects, whether it's a landscape or, you know, an urban scene. But at the same time, I think it comes down to just, you know, how you might be skilled with your camera and what does the scene call for. So is it a wide angle? Is it a telephoto? I mean, you make those decisions no matter what the subject, no matter what the environment is, no matter what the environment is. But I think ultimately, you do approach it the same way, at least I do, in the sense of a subject is a subject, but of course it depends what effect or what I want it to look like. And that will dictate my approach. I've been to Iceland a few times. It's quite amazing to shoot. It's a very picturesque country. I haven't been to Greenland yet. I'm going to be in July. I'm doing a workshop with David Burdeni. I have to give him a shout out because he's definitely one of my inspirations. I'm quite honored to do it with him and experience Greenland that way. Because I think in a lot of ways, and forgive me, Iceland, for saying this, but it is the new Iceland when it comes to photography. I think people, the last time I was there, it was very commercialized. And again, this is not to take it away because Iceland is just stunning, right? Mm-hmm. But I want to do something a little bit different because a lot of the sites have been photographed many, many times. I've seen many, many pictures of Greenland as well, but I still think there's something interesting to shoot there that's a little bit different than what I've seen. And yeah, that's what's getting my creative juices flowing.
Yeah, it's interesting because if you say Iceland or even like Faroe Island seems to be really popular now, or Norway, I get a picture in my head of what all those would look like. But when you say the word Greenland, I think of it on the map. I don't know. I can't picture like what are the shots you're going to get in Greenland. So is it like waterfalls like Iceland? Is it what are you going for?
Yeah, so a lot of it will be things like icebergs, landscape. We'll be on a boat.
Practically icebergs. Every day. Yeah, that's totally different. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So it's a different thing for me because I haven't really shot icebergs before. But I got a sense of what I need to do, of course. But and of course, just the culture as well. Trying to find something that would be interesting as a series when I'm there beyond icebergs, I think would be quite great to try. And that's the thing about what I love to do in my photography. I like to stretch my boundaries many, many times. And this is certainly different for me, and I'm really, really looking forward to it.
So what are your other favorite places like that are not urban cities that you've been to? Greenland, Iceland, have you done like the first thing that comes to mind is like the dunes of Death Valley? Have you done that kind of stuff before? I feel like that's right up your alley there.
Yeah, no, I haven't. I haven't had the privilege to do that. I would love to do it, of course, right? And see if I could do something different with it. Mm-hmm. I've seen many, many stellar photos with many, many stellar photographers. But at the same time, I keep coming back to Japan, to be honest with you. Japan is,
all right,
is just
going to Japan.
Yeah. I mean, this is not to say that I wouldn't, of course, right. I would love to do that. But I want something more, if I could, at least right now I do, not that I wouldn't try anything else cause I'm really gung ho about trying many, many things. But I like, just a really different mood to a place that I can capture. Right. Yeah. And whatever that may be and wherever that may be, I'm game.
I love it. I love it. Now for Iceland, you did the ones that I remember your shots from Iceland. There was a lot of black and white. Am I right about that?
Yeah.
A lot of like
black and white and color, but yes, definitely.
I remember a lot of like high contrast black and white images. When is it that you decide, hey, this is going to be black and white? This is going to work best in black and white. Is that as you're shooting? Is that not until you're processing? What's your thinking behind deciding that, yes, this is going to be a monochrome?
Yeah, I think, I tend to try both ways first. So I may not be decisive and say, yeah, this has got to be black and white or this has to be color or this way. It really depends on when I'm looking through my images. If I see sort of a series or images that work together, I will decide. Again, if you see my Iceland portfolio, you will see the dark black and white, but you'll also see the really dark color ones as well, right? And people ask me, which are your favorites? Mm-hmm. I can't really answer that question.
Like your favorite children, yes.
Yeah, exactly. But I basically think to myself that, do I just want to isolate the waterfall, for example, and leave everything in the dark, right? That's sort of my thinking around that. Or do I want to soften certain areas and make contrast in others? That's where I decide, okay, yeah, a black and white image would work, but is it different than what I've seen out there, right? Ultimately, that's how I try to decide whether it is different, because you know, Skogafoss, for example, has been photographed like crazy, but how do you make it your own? And it goes back to my original test, if you will, about, you know, standing where millions of people have stood and trying to make it different and unique. And I think that's what I try to do, and I hope I'm successful.
Yeah, you're absolutely successful. in those images, it totally worked. All right. Well, you know what? This is like kind of hurt my brain, like the level of these questions and answers. And I just had so much to absorb there. But, you know, where can people go? They want to see your Iceland portfolio. They want to see any workshops that you have coming up.
Sure.
Where can people go to find you and see your work?
Yeah, sure. You can find me through my website at silverzenphotography.com. Long name, but that's where I am. Obviously, I'm things like Instagram at John Cosmopolis is where you find me. Hopefully, you can type up my name; it'll just come up. And those of you who want to pronounce the name well, like Chris did, for example, think of Metropolis and then think Cosmopolis. That makes yeah. Maybe that works. I don't
know. That definitely works. I don't even want to think about how other people say it, because then I'd get it all wrong from then on.
Fair enough. Yeah. No, so that's where you'll mostly find me these days.
Yeah, and if you just Google it, if you get close to the name, you'll come up in lots of different places for sure.
Sure.
Yeah, so silverzenphotography.com is the main website, and you can get to all the places from there. All right, anything else we should have talked about as we were going?
Oh, man.
Man, I had some questions ahead of time. I don't even know if I ended up asking those, but yeah.
You know what? We can always save it for Chicago in a couple of weeks, right?
That's right. That's
part
right.
of my talk, so I'll be talking much more about this. And I have to tell people who come to these events, I am not the kind of, I'm just not a lecturer, not a talking head. Every time I do one of these things, it's a conversation. And I want people to know that.
Yeah. So people are going to be asking questions during, kind of like I kept interrupting sure. you and asking questions. I hope you don't mind.
Absolutely not. That was great, Chris.
Yeah. And that's kind of the best part about these events, though, too, is that you get so much from a presentation. But then they're going to track you down at one of the meals, or they're going to, you know, yeah. in the halls, they're going to find you and be able to ask whatever they want, you know, their own kind of personal things. I got to ask my personal questions here, but
yeah, absolutely.
They'll get to do their own things at the events. So that's coming up just end of next week.
Yes.
Really looking forward to it. So,
me too.
So hope to see a lot of you guys there, and looking forward to seeing you again, John. So, yeah.
You know, ditto, Chris. Cheers. I'm really looking forward to seeing you guys and catching up. And I'm always appreciative that you invite me to these great events.
Oh, of course. Yeah, you've been awesome. So yeah, we'll have to sit down next week and talk out of Japan and figure that one out.
Okay, let's talk.
All right, very good.
Cool.
Thank you, John. All right, see you next week. Bye-bye.
You got it. Take care. Bye.
F8, The Photographer's Perspective is hosted by me, Chris Smith, and produced by Out of Chicago. A special thanks to all photographers that share their inside knowledge to make this possible. We release a new episode each week, so be sure to subscribe to the show wherever podcasts are found. To learn more about Out of Chicago and upcoming events, go to outofchicago.com. Subscribe to our mailing list to stay connected and be the first to know of our next new location where you can shoot side by side with the pros.